Hi, my name is Kathy Collins, and I'll be co-hosting Airing Addiction with Lisa Blanchard.
No one story is the same as someone else's, but each journey is different.
Same thing on the table.
Having run substance use treatment programs for over 20 years, trying to make sure that we are welcoming to all.
I love the idea that kind of having that exposure and that affirming place, even for one person, impacts that milieu, which then can impact maybe the broader recovery community, the community at large. I mean, I really love that, that thought.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Airing Addiction, our podcast that is live on Facebook right now. It'll be uploaded on Thursday of this week, but we're excited. We have a great episode this week. We're keeping it in the family to talk about all things COVID. So I will turn it over to my co-host, Lisa Blanchard. I'm Kathy Collins, and we'll take it from there.
Thanks so much, Kathy, and thanks everybody for listening today. So I'm really, really excited to introduce our guest today. So our guest today is Spectrum and New England Recovery Center's Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Jeffrey Baxter, and he's here to talk to us about our services and all of the things we've had to shift, like all of us have in so many ways in this past year. So thanks so much, Dr. Baxter. Happy to have you.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So you've been our chief medical officer for many years now, but I have to imagine in a lot of ways that this past year has been one of the most unbelievable, challenging, interesting experiences that you have probably had, at your time at Spectrum or probably in
your entire career, possibly.
Right. I don't think it will come as a surprise to all of you that they, you know, don't teach the details of how to respond to a pandemic in everyday medical school, right? You know, if you think about most people are saying this is sort of a once in a century event, and we as, you know, providers and everyone out there as citizens and patients are all living through it together. So it's very, instead of having to worry about how they can get free childcare and come and meet with a clinician, they're able to, you know, grab their smart visits and allowed our clinical supports to reach people that were difficult. It was difficult for them, right? Who faced a lot of barriers to coming in before. But on the other hand, you know, I don't think anyone feels like it's a true substitute for the in-person care and the connection you get by, you know, meeting with somebody in person. So there are pros.
That's what I was going to say. I wondered if you had any insight into do you think it will take over ultimately, or there will be a place for it, but when we get back to normal, the face-to-face is really critical. Is that how you see it?
I love the thought that we're going to be able to offer new options, but not think still that one size fits all. Right. So it would be so great to be able to continue to offer a platform, but then to still have inpatient services for those who don't do well with the technology or don't have the technology at home, or really get something out of the group dynamic and the in-person, you know, sort of you get from meeting with somebody in person. So I like I said, more choices of effective treatment is always better.
Lisa, as a clinical sorry. I was just going to ask Lisa, as a clinical person, is that what you have, if you were to?
Absolutely. You know, I think, you know, there's definitely a need for in-person connection. You can't replace that connection, that human connection with, you know, I'm here. You can tell that I care about you. You can tell that I just want you to access care and enter recovery. You can get pieces of that, you know, virtually. It's better than not having it at all. And removing barriers is huge. So I do hope, and there's been a lot of advocacy to allow these telehealth models to stay, right? To allow them to stay in place so that when somebody can't get to an appointment, it's not that they don't get care. Right. So that they, you know, they don't no show an appointment, they can still, you know, receive that appointment, you know, especially even, you know, even prescribed medication visits for buprenorphine, you know, you're not going to miss that prescription or miss that connection to care, but have the option to, you know, to do it in person, have a real hybrid, and have it be individualized, right? So based on what that person needs, because some people just don't engage well, right? And that's what we see. Some people really do because it eliminates the barriers, which that might have been what was getting in their way to show up to care. And some people just aren't engaging really well, especially if they are admitting to our programs in the middle of this pandemic and didn't have an existing relationship. So I think that's a good spin off to my kind of next question for you, Dr. Baxter, is, you know, how have we continued to offer, you know, availability and access for admissions, right? For if somebody wants to enter treatment right now, you know, how are we doing that?
So I apologize, Lisa, we had a little bit of a delay in the internet. I don't know if that's on my side or your side. So I wasn't able to hear your question completely.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, we have to have patience for this technology, right? This is exactly what we're talking about. So my question was, you know, how have we shifted our admission procedures to keep the patients and the staff safe, but still, you know, be available for admissions amidst the pandemic?
Sure. So if we stay focused just on our outpatient services, we have had to really dramatically change our model. So we really prided ourselves on a walk-in model, you know, prior to COVID, where we would really, anybody who could show up, we would, as long as they were willing to wait through the morning and go through the process, we would get them into treatment. And because of the importance of social distancing, we really weren't able to continue that walk-in model. So early on in the process, we had to switch to more of an appointment model, you know, which isn't as convenient for people, a lot of people, right? They might not know ahead of time or be, you know, that they want treatment. It definitely slows down the people who were, you know, kind of doing the spur of the moment treatment entry, which we were always happy to accommodate. So we've gone from, you know, having maybe 12, even 15 people in a morning at our busiest site, to having really only 3 or 4 people in the building at any one time, because each patient who comes in for admission gets assigned his or her own room. And we've turned the group rooms into patient care rooms, and are doing a lot of our interviews and intakes over the telephone, from the group rooms, just to keep people safe, you know, to allow them their own space and you know, keep those social distancing guidelines. The buprenorphine admissions as well at our buprenorphine sites, the rules about that are a little more flexible. We've even been able to admit people without them having to come on site. That's now allowed under the COVID emergency rules, but we've had the same sort of limitations in numbers. If people are on site, you know, we can only have 2 or 3 people in the building at any one time in order to keep them safely apart.
Yeah, that's a huge challenge. I'm curious how our inpatient, how the outpatient, has it led to more inpatient, or how do they play together, and what are we doing? I personally know we have a COVID unit, but I'm wondering if you could talk about a little bit about that and how that came to be for us.
Yeah, the delivery of patient care has been particularly challenging for patients, honestly, because inpatient care is really structured in a way that there's a lot of shared space. You know, it's kind of a group approach. And so each room is shared in most facilities, not all, but most facilities, you share a room. You might share a bathroom, and it feels more like a dormitory than a fancy hotel room, right? So, you know, you might share one restroom for, you know, a wing on the floor. So you can imagine the challenges in social distancing when you have a shared kitchen space and a shared lounge space, shared rooms, shared bathrooms. It's been extremely challenging. And, you know, imagine from a patient's perspective coming onto an inpatient unit, and especially if you're sick, right? If you need treatment for withdrawal, and then being asked to stay in your room and wear your mask all day. And so we've had, you know, we like all programs, we become sick on the units. Our response has been to create some extra space so that we can isolate people who are symptomatic. And we also units for patients who are positive for the COVID. Spectrum is providing withdrawal treatment at our unit in Westboro, we have a designated COVID unit for treating patients who need that level of service.
And that was really something that was, I think, extremely innovative of Spectrum, right? Like, we were the first provider to open up a dedicated unit for individuals who needed both substance use withdrawal management and inpatient care and or positive COVID, so that people had a safe space to go. Can you talk a little bit about kind of the protections we've put in place on that unit, whether that's, you know, PPE or screening assessment? Like, how are we keeping folks kind of safe on that unit?
Yeah, let me say a couple of things in preparation for that. So the first is, there was a lot of talk about isolation and social distancing across the state and even across the country, but very little discussion of the mechanics of how people who don't have their own resources or have a lot of shared resources could actually do that, right? Mm-hmm. And so, it's fine if you have your own apartment and you have your own room and you have your own bathroom and you have a job that lets you take time off, right? You can isolate. That's not really the case for a lot of our patients, is it, right? So it was great to walk into Spectrum's operation, so meeting at the inpatient unit. And I remember the day I kind of sat there and mused. I was like, wow, this state really needs a detox unit just for people who are COVID positive. And really within a week, they came back to me with a plan on how to use one of the wings in our Westboro campus to do that. So kudos to the team. There's no challenge they're not willing to rise to. What we were able to do is there's in our campus, there's actually one part of the building that's set apart from the rest, and it's linked up by a hallway, a sort of a skyway. And we turned that into the clean zone. And that's where our staff go in and they change into their full protective gear. You know, it looks a lot like what you see on the TV. Everybody has their masks and their eye shields and, making sure that they're protected and covered. And, because everybody's positive, all of our staff members from the recovery staff all the way through nursing and physicians are wearing full protective gear. And when they come out of the unit, you have to take it all off because it's contaminated, right? So we had to make sure we had adequate supplies of protective gear and a way for people to put it on in a clean space and then come out and take it off in a separate space. We're really lucky that we had a space on campus that would allow that sort of flow of traffic through, from putting the stuff on, interacting and supporting patients, and then stepping out and, taking that off and then coming back around to start the process over again.
Mm. Fascinating. Yeah, I don't think I had heard that portion of it. And I know the COVID unit is full frequently. So we're helping a lot of patients. It doesn't mean, correct me if I'm wrong, it doesn't mean everyone that is in the COVID unit that is COVID positive is extremely ill. But the capacity is that if they are ill and they're having symptoms, they're in a safe space, they're getting well, they're getting treatment for their addiction or whatever it might be. So they're getting everything they need so that they can hopefully come out the other side. I am just absolutely fascinated as a person in recovery, how people can actually get clean and sober during a pandemic. To me, I just can't even imagine it. I mean, I'm staying clean and sober, but getting there, like you mentioned, isolation, and I just can't get over it.
Yes.
I mean, my hats are off to the patients who are getting sober during a pandemic.
Yeah, as if it weren't challenging enough, right, to put this overlay on top of it. But the demand has stayed steady. And again, our strategy is just to try to not turn anybody away. So, to be able to offer this specialized unit, it definitely is not hospital care. And so, patients that are truly sick and need hospital care do still get transferred to a hospital. But if they don't need that sort of oxygen support or IV medications and really just need support, a safe place to be and good high quality support for their substance use recovery, it's a great place to be. And it's unique, right? There really aren't other places in the state that are set up to take care of this population.
Right. And I think it's a
Yeah, and I can speak to kind of what we've tried to do clinically, right? So Kathy, when you talk about how challenging that is and how we do provide recovery support, we even had to really think differently about how we provide clinical care, right? So we heard Dr. Baxter talk about kind of groups and group settings and congregate care settings. That's typically what happens on an inpatient unit is there's a lot of group counseling because you've got a lot of people that need kind of have similar needs. And so you do it with a group model often, and that certainly doesn't work on a COVID unit, right? And is even challenging on, you know, just in COVID time with in a regular inpatient unit. So what we've done is provide patients with a tablet. So they, you know, are in their own isolated room and they have a tablet and we're able to do telehealth counseling sessions. You know, the clinician could be in the next building, but they don't have to be in the room with them for that portion to do a good clinical session. And it also, they also have access to good recovery support. So, they can, read recovery materials. We've modified several of our group materials to be consumable kind of on a tablet. So what the kind of material and worksheets and things they might get if they were able to do a group. But also, with any downtime that they have, they can join all of the online, recovery support that exists now, right? One of the other things to kind of come out of this pandemic is a really strong, connection to, mutual self-help, 12-step, several options of recovery support. So all of those links are already embedded. So all you have to do is kind of tap it and you can find, a meeting at any time while they're on the unit as well.
That's great. And then what about the, as a patient in the, let's just say the residential New England Recovery Center, I know there's extreme protocols there as well. How about those treatment? Like if I was a patient there, I would still be getting groups.
Well, it's been right. So Lisa, you can speak to this too, but the delivery of the really high quality, sort of group oriented care that those residential programs are based on or built on has been particularly challenging, right? Because not only do we need to keep patients on those units safely separated, but we also are not having people come and go into those programs. So commitments from outside, for example, have had to be cut off for safety. Even family visits, right, have been very limited. And job opportunities, like, there are times when, we've had to say it's really not safe right now for people to even leave to hold jobs. So, on the one hand, you have a roof over your head, you have high quality, recovery infrastructure and supports, and you're still very isolated because that's the one thing that keeps people safe from the virus.
Yep. And we've just done the best we can, Kathy, is that we're still running groups, but we're running them much smaller, shorter, and kind of spread out throughout the day, right? And winter is probably our biggest challenge. So I think we took, a lot of advantage of weather opportunities, in the spring, summer and fall, when we could be outside. So holding groups, we've got a beautiful healing garden at the New England Recovery Center, kind of holding group sessions and individual counseling sessions and family meetings and outdoor spaces, allows you to spread out and be a bit safer. Winter makes that challenging for a lot of reasons. So, we continue to just do the best that we can.
Yeah. And people are getting well. I do know that. I mean, that's the good news. What we're doing is working. People are still getting into treatment and still getting the services. So, I think from my take, I hear that the clinical is better than ever. So maybe even the smaller groups, I mean, who knows? Maybe that's one of those changes like telehealth. We're going to adapt to different things if they're more successful. I don't know.
Thank Spectrum's operating team there on the inpatient campus. We applied for and received vaccine to be able to administer not only to Spectrum staff to keep them safe and help prevent them from bringing virus in and taking virus home, but we've been vaccinating patients in our long-term levels of care as well. Department of Public Health is expanding their vaccine inclusivity category. Right now they're going to include people at the CSS level of care, which is kind of that 2 to 4 week shorter term residential. Uh-huh. So our goal is to have all people at residential levels of care receive the vaccine with us as part of their treatment as well.
Fantastic. That's and really
it's amazing. Been great.
Yeah, that's really terrific.
And I do think that we really kind of, you know, pushed to make sure we had access to that. And I think that's one of the things really, you know, in part to your leadership, Dr. Baxter, and to the leadership of the whole operational team, you know, I know that well, that, you know, we really, you know, didn't wait for things to be, you know, kind of handed to us as an organization. We didn't wait to, you know, to say, okay, what do we do next? Somebody give us guidance. We created the guidance. We created COVID units. We, you know, adjusted our services and we went for and obtained vaccines, right? So that we could move, you know, not only the organization, but our staff and our patients forward as safely as possible. And so, you know, that I think is something that, you know, I'm certainly very proud of and very appreciative of.
I'll say I really like that about Spectrum's operational team is they're not passive. They don't wait for someone else to tell them how to do something.
I love that.
They're out there in front of it and they did not wait for the Department of Public Health to tell them how to vaccinate patients and staff. They went right for it, applied for it early in the process and because they were on top of all that and early, we did receive some of the earliest supply of vaccine of any sort of similar organization in the state. So kudos to the team.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and it speaks well to the, in my opinion, it speaks well to the leadership that we're able, you know, it came from somewhere, but then it has to pass by leadership. So in my opinion, it speaks well to sort of the organization and why we have some of the cutting edge things that we do, which to me, that's a big deal as an outreach person as well.
Mm-hmm. And I think it speaks to, you know, kind of our public health whole person approach, right? Like we're not just here to treat your withdrawal, to provide limited residential care. We really have, as an organization, taken a whole patient, you know, integrated approach, you know, whether that's embedding psychiatry into our programs or making sure people are vaccinated against a pandemic while they're with us, right? I mean, it's all kind of part of an approach towards taking care of the whole person so that they can enter recovery, you know, healthy.
We're throwing a lot of questions at you, but I'm wondering, is there anything percolating that you're thinking, COVID's going to be here for a little bit longer. We're all not, you know, herd immunity is a ways off, I'm sure. Is there anything that's like in your head, like, oh, I just wish the one thing we could do. Is there anything that you're thinking, this is the thing I'd like to overcome right now?
Oh, well, please, that list is very long. So first thing I'll do, I'll show everybody my shoulder. This is the shoulder where I got my vaccine 3 weeks ago. Thank you to Spectrum. Feels great. I'm functioning fine. I know there
you
are
look healthy.
I weathered it well. So I know a lot of people out there, you know, have some concerns about the vaccine. But, you know, yes, it's new. You know, yes, it was approved on an emergency basis, but you know, it's tried and true technology. And except for a sore shoulder, I'm really glad to have received it. So I encourage everyone who's out there, you know, the vaccine is the number one strategy for us to get back to normal as possible, as quickly as possible. So please pursue your opportunities to get that.
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I say, you know, I think my priority is to get all of our staff protected because without staff, we can't offer any of our services, right? So we've even offered vaccine to, you know, some of our staff who might live with, let's say, elderly parents or share childcare with somebody. Like we want to make sure our staff is safe and that their immediate bubble is safe too, because if one person in a household goes down, you know, everybody goes down.
Yeah, so true.
My other priority is just get our staff protected so that they can continue to deliver these really important services.
And I think that's another thing that I've been impressed with, Dr. Baxter, with your leadership through this pandemic is staff communication. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, and feel free to expand on it, because I know that started with daily, you know, phone calls and calls available to leadership and other staff, multiple meetings, you know, in availability to you directly, you know, as our chief medical officer to kind of ask questions, because this is all brand new to kind of all of us. This is the first, you know, major pandemic we've had to deal with in most of our lifetimes. And so can you
talk on the last one too, right?
Can you talk a little bit about, you know, how important that communication has been, you know, with the entire staff?
Yeah, so just critical, right? I mean, but you know, the bottom line is we were all in this together, right? And we were all as inexperienced with this as the next person, right? And so we really needed to lean on each other in order to make sure the goal was no one should be turned away and we should have no interruption in services, right? And so all of a sudden you have dangerous, deadly pandemic dropped on your lap and 5,500 methadone patients coming in every day for life-saving medication, right? So what do we do about that? So, you know, we went into emergency management mode and, you know, we needed to come up with systems really quickly and, you know, to help keep everybody safe. And honestly, everybody just jumped right to it. That's what's great about the team. So, you know, and there were lots of questions, right? People didn't really understand what the right thing to do was. And so, you know, we really had to bring people together, but then get the word out. Here's what we're doing this week. Okay, new situation. Here's what we're doing this week. And you have to be able to act on the fly, right? When the situation was changing as quickly as it was. We had a nice little lull in the summertime, right? Things got a little, we were able to be outside, provide a lot of care outside. And then as winter kicked in, you know, you all saw what happened in the cold parts of the country. People came back inside and it's come back again. So I feel like we're better prepared this time around, but we know where our challenges lie. And we've been working on them to, again, try to make sure don't interrupt services, don't turn people away. That's our goal.
And to that point, I think we've done a lot of work, and if you can expand on this with, you know, integrating our services into the community and kind of bringing it to people wherever they are, so that we aren't interrupting care. And so can you talk a little bit about kind of how, especially in our outpatient programs, we've connected with kind of the local shelters and residential programs to ensure care is continued?
We have really, really invested a lot of time and energy in supporting our partners in the sort of recovery community. For example, if you think about residential homes, residential programs, shelters that are treating the most vulnerable, they're facing really the same challenges, sometimes with, you know, substantially even less resources, right, than we have. I mean, how do you keep someone socially distanced in a homeless shelter? Mm. Right. There's no way to do that. So one example is that, you know, some of the shelters in Worcester, for example, they created additional shelter sites. And then would want to quarantine the shelter group, right, to keep them safe if there were outbreaks. And we actually just, as soon as we were asked, we started delivering methadone to those shelter sites. Again, you know, no reimbursement for that kind of thing. It's a system we had to create on our own. But when, you know, Dr. Castile from the city of Worcester, you know, and Dr. Garcia set up, you know, smaller distributed shelter sites around the city so that they could, you know, reduce the number of people at the main shelter. Mm-hmm. You know, they were calling us saying we have patients on methadone that we're trying to keep here and keep safe and we don't know what to do. So our teams actually, you know, nurses went out and brought the methadone to those places every day in order to support the work that, you know, the city
was
trying to do with those shelters.
That's some unknown, that when they speak of the unknown heroes of the pandemic, like, I didn't even realize that. That's incredible because, I mean, think about that. They can keep these people isolated and safe together. One person's, that's really wonderful.
And by definition, methadone treatment does not support social distancing, right? And yet we have, you know, 5,500 patients on methadone across the state that we have to look out for. So that was one of the ways. And any shelter program, residential programs, you know, short-term CSS, for example, sort of programs, we get, you know, made the commitment to support them when they wanted to keep patients in for safety. We made sure the methadone dosing got to them, you know, even if they would send a surrogate to keep, put it all locked up and carry it back to the programs, you know, we made sure that it met all the regulations so that the methadone could go to them in their safe space.
That's wonderful. Yeah.
And it's such an unbelievably high risk time, right? And I think that that's well known. I mean, I think everybody's probably heard about the increase in alcohol use, and there's certainly an increase in the overdose rates. And, you know, we've said before on this podcast that, you know, addiction thrives in isolation and recovery thrives in connection. And that's really challenging right now for all of us. So if we can keep people safe, keep continuing their medication in such a high risk time, that means they're much less likely, you know, to overdose, much less likely to have a recurrence of use, you know, if possible. So it's unbelievably important, you know, as challenging as it is, as many barriers as it can present, you know, both just operations and regulatory, you know, overcoming those is certainly worth it.
And I don't want to come as a surprise to you guys when I say that, you know, when all the positive forces, you know, get kind of shut down out of respect for social distancing guideline, the negative forces don't really pay attention to that stuff. So it's not like the drug dealers were saying, no, thank you, I can't sell to you today because I'm social distancing, right? So, and yet your sponsor, you couldn't go see your sponsor, you couldn't go to your meeting, all of a sudden you couldn't maybe get to your program support, you might not have been able to go to work, you might have been isolated from your family and all your positive support. So when you take away all the good stuff, you know, all that's left is the not good stuff. And so it's been really challenging for our patients in that setting.
I'm wondering, besides what Lisa just mentioned, mm-hmm. are there any trends that stick out to you that you've seen in the patient population since COVID? You know, I know people, this is my own sort of mind guessing, but, you know, I know middle-aged women who are having to help their children at home, alcohol use is up, or like, overdose deaths might be up because people are using in isolation. Is there anything that stands out as a not necessarily a positive trend, but a trend that you've sort of made note of?
Well, the trend that's most important to me is that the demand for treatment hasn't fallen off. So that's really important. I guess my biggest worry is that people would stop coming in thinking that it's not safe, or they didn't want to, or they couldn't risk it. And so, you know, even with our new systems that had to be a little, you know, more structured, like a little more challenging to access. You got to call ahead of time. You got to show up at your time. Uh-huh. We've been full, right? And that's important. I like I said, I don't want anyone who's interested in treatment not to be able to get it. So, you know, everybody around the country, honestly, is really worried. Like even right before uh-huh. COVID, there was a noted increase after the first decrease in overdose deaths in the country in like the 2018-2019, that was obviously just a short lull. And by the end of 2019, we started to see those numbers going up again. So everyone's concerned that, you know, with this huge social upheaval, there's going to be a significant increase in drug overdose deaths. Mm-hmm. And that data tends to lag by 3 to 6 months. So, you know, I don't know personally, like we're in this field, we always deal with loss as families who are supporting people in recovery know that you are always facing the potential for loss and worried about loss. And, you know, that's the same for our team. And we have had losses and we want to minimize those losses. So we're worried about that. We're definitely worried about that. And that's why we remain committed. The doors are not closing. We're not closing the doors. We're not turning people away.
Which I think that's a very good point. The bed availability still is, we're still helping people. So, yeah. And now is as good a time as any to get treatment because you have really good, a good opportunity to come out of the pandemic safe in many regards.
Well, and I mean, I wonder if this is one of the things you're thinking with asking that question, but for people who are considering, is this the right time to, you know, to try to get into recovery? Oh yeah, we're here. Like, and we can keep you definitely safer than you would be if you were using, right? So we have multiple levels of care available. We have our inpatient services, if that's what you need. We can step you down from inpatient to outpatient. We can start you right in outpatient services. We are there. We have not stopped providing services. So, you know, if you're thinking in the background, I was getting ready to go, but when this COVID hit, I thought maybe I shouldn't. Oh no, we're there. We're ready for you. And don't hold back because, you know, there's COVID certainly hasn't changed the safety of the use of the drugs, right? We know that those are life-threatening and people are dying every day. So don't wait another day. Come on in.
Absolutely, I agree.
We also had a big part in, you know, not just providing treatment, which is a huge overdose prevention strategy, right? Like providing adequate care, adequate, you know, treatment, medications that are evidence-based. But we've also distributed, with the help of the Department of Public Health, a lot of Narcan, right? So I've talked to the outpatient teams that there's a real recognition of how high risk the substances are that are out there, right? So speaking to what Dr. Baxter just said, even before COVID, we were seeing overdose rates go up, you know, likely related to, you know, what is available, you know, in the communities and on the streets. And so, you know, making sure that folks also have Narcan available to them.
Well, you know, and it's funny. I mean, patients, again, reflecting on their own commitment, they come into our programs and we give them Narcan. They say to us, "No, I don't need that. You know, I'm good. I'm here because I've decided not to use anymore." And I say, I am so happy to hear that, and I 100% support and respect that. And so now it's your chance. You know, if that person next to you goes out. So keep this around, because you never know when you might need it to help somebody else get to the place where you are now.
Mm-hmm. Very good point. As we wind down this episode, I'll let Lisa ask her sort of final question, but it really has been such a pleasure talking to you and hearing all about the things that Spectrum and New England Recovery Center have done during this pandemic. And I just wanted to say thank you for being our guest. And I know we have more coming, which I'll let Lisa allude to, but I did want to just give a shout out for spring is only 53 days away. So it's likely we'll be able to get to the outside sooner rather than later. And I appreciate all the efforts on behalf of you as well, Lisa, the leadership team. You guys, you're an incredible voice for our company. And it's almost like I'm the lucky one who gets to, you know, talk to both of you today. So I'll turn it over to Lisa as we wind down.
So, you know, so as Dr. Baxter knows, we were kind of talking about what we would talk about in today's episode, and COVID is such a big topic, right? There's just so many. You've heard all of the nuances and all of the things that that Dr. Baxter and the teams have had to shift and do in order to try to keep us safe and combat addiction at the same time. And so we also wanted to take some opportunity, and so we'll be scheduling another episode. So kind of stay tuned, you know, and we'll schedule another episode within the next couple of weeks to just talk about kind of the Spectrum services and New England Recovery Center services that we do offer, and what ways we have, not just related to COVID, but in general, been that kind of on-demand treatment provider. How have we kind of, you know, evolved with the field and really been kind of on the forefront of meeting people wherever they're at to provide kind of life-saving care. So, you know, with that, is there anything else you'd like to say, Dr. Baxter, about kind of our COVID response, or to tee us up for our next episode?
We're open. We're ready for you. Come on in.
I love that too.
I'm in Southbridge today doing admissions today. So we're here for you. Come on in.
Thank you for sure. So thank you so much, Dr. Baxter, for joining us today. Thanks everybody for, you know, watching on Facebook Live or listening wherever you get your podcasts. And we look forward to kind of the next episode with you.
Thanks so much.
It was great having you. Bye-bye. Thank you.